All right, well, let's get on to this award-winning, exciting lesson. Now, I think I made it very clear the first Sabbath that I am not a creation-type person. Doesn't excite me. You know, I apologize for it. Just doesn't excite me. God created, so what? 148th day of the 2300 days, I get excited about that. The picture of God in the Old Testament, I get excited about that. The four Gospels and how Christ came to demonstrate who God is, I get excited about that. But I don't own creation. Now, does anybody remember what else I don't get excited about and don't like? What? What?
Camping.
Well, camping, yeah, that definitely. Is nature. Don't care about nature. Didn't become a... What did he become? A master guide? Or master something? Pathfinder something? I didn't get any badges in nature. Didn't care. So, guess what the title of the lesson today is? Nature in creation. So, now, can you imagine my excitement when I opened up the quarterly Thursday night and said, well, let me see what I have to teach on, and I see nature in creation. So, I just shut it. So, what I'm going to do today is, how many of you all like nature? Raise your hands high. I mean, you know, just, man, crazy about nature. Well, you tell me, how does nature affect you as far as creation? Because the only thing that nature's ever done for me was the one time that I went actually camping in a tent out in the middle of nowhere with two other families, that we had to lug everything we had for 100 miles from where we parked our car, was I did look out under a tent because I had absolutely nothing else to do and saw the stars, and I just said, who can doubt that God created all of this mess? And that's how nature and creation hit me, and since that time, I've never spent hardly any time studying it. So, those that love nature, tell me, why do we say that nature's God's second lesson book? I'd be interested to know that. So, who would like to start? Yes?
Because we get food from nature.
Because you get what?
Food,
okay. All right. Who else? Yes?
Nothing against Texas, but, you know, we came here from Colorado, and every Sabbath, year-round, we hiked, even in the snow. Here's what I really miss. Anybody ever been to Mount Evans in the Denver Rocky Mountains?
Which one?
Mount Evans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Above the Timberline. We hiked every Sabbath. That we would hike every other Sabbath at Lookout Mountain. And then we would go to Glacier, St. Mary's Glacier. There's one point in the hike on to St. Mary's Glacier where you cross a riverbed, a dry riverbed, and we would, a group of us, I mean, we would take visitors from church, and it's like 12 of us, and we would sit at the as far as we could go at St. Mary's Glacier, and you actually see the glacier. We're sitting there, and you're looking at the peaks of the mountain, and then we would start to sing, and our voices would just bounce off the mountain, and I mean, I just miss that so much. That beauty speaks to me. If I could, I'd be back in Colorado.
Oh, okay. All right.
I love Colorado.
How many of y'all been to Mount Rushmore? Is it kind of a moving experience to see that?
Yeah.
I got news for you. God didn't create Mount Rushmore. Man created Mount Rushmore. So, if you're sitting on a mountaintop saying great, or if you see Mount Rushmore, okay. What else does God... I'm not saying what you're saying is wrong. I'm just saying That wouldn't motivate me because I'd be dead before I got to the top of the place. All right. Well, who else? Tell me why nature means something as far as God and creation to you. Yes.
Every time I look at a beautiful flower, I can think that God did that. He created that beauty. If I look at an animal, I can see God's handiwork there in an animal.
Okay.
I can see His humor in animals. I can see His humor even in plants and so forth. Now, he created plants that'll stick you. There's a reason for everything He did. By looking at nature, it brings me closer to my God.
Okay, I appreciate that. Who else? Yes.
Well, I think when you study the sciences like biology and chemistry and physics, that in the study and when you start blowing things up with a microscope, and I've looked through some of these that, you know, million power type microscope, it seems like, and you can see so much that you can't imagine. When you start seeing osmosis and seeing some of these other things, and you know that we didn't come from some goofiness, you know, of explosion or or whatever, it just is so very apparent that there's a perfect scheme for everything. And the same with astronomy, you know, as you look at these things and see their place. You know, we had an experience this week of this meteorite that passed so close to the Earth, and then the one that exploded over in Russia. You know, two things in 1 week is pretty amazing when you haven't had anything like that in years. But those things to me, that God controls all of this, and He has made it possible to rain. You know, in the lesson it talked about this thing of, in the flood, how it changed the natural irrigation plan that God had for this earth. And you think about that, and if you go to the Grand Canyon or some of these other canyons, and you look at all of these stratas of rocks and clays and dirts, and you're sitting there listening to a guy that's a forestry expert, and he's trying to explain the millions of years that it took to do this, and you're saying, it was like a flood. And so, you know, as Christians, we look at this and we see things in a whole different light. They look at it and say, we've got to give an answer for this because we're the experts.
Okay. All right.
And they show how little they really know.
Appreciate that. Who else? Yes.
When I go to Denver, of course, I'm in heaven already. I call it Paradise, Colorado, instead of Parker. Anyway, I can see.
Do you know that in heaven, they're going to have all of us, and they're going to take all of you people from Colorado and put you way over here. And you're going to think you're all in heaven. And over here, we're just going to suffer for the rest of the universe.
The last time I was in Colorado, Nikki is a doe. She has a little nick in her ear, so Donna named her Nikki. And she came up to the patio, and I put my hand. Well, first I had a ball of corn. And she just came closer and closer, and then I poured the corn in my hand and dropped the bowl behind me, and she ate out of my hand, and I pet her. I was in seventh heaven.
Yes, yes. See, I would have said, get away from me. You're going to bite my hand. Now, let me ask you a fair question, because I only ask fair questions. Right, Steve?
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Do you want to answer the fair question?
Do I get a dollar?
See? Matter of fact, you do. just for showing up on time. Now, wasn't your fault the preacher preached longer. Yeah. He's still on time. Now, I got a fair question. Colorado. Reason I don't like Colorado, when I was at you, anybody ever been to Union College? You know, you always had these people from Texas, and you had these people from Colorado, and you had these people from Minnesota. For some reason, a lot of them thought Minnesota was God's paradise. And so, you know, you just kind of dislike Colorado people because that's all they could talk about, was Colorado. Anyway, see, it's what happens when you have nothing prepared. I mean, you just start rambling. So, but anyway, now, got a fair question though to ask, though. Very tender to her, the story of the deer. Very tender to Jan being on a mountaintop singing and hearing the echoes and everything. Very tender. What's your profession?
Oh, well, I was in coating sales with fancy paint.
Oh, okay. All right. But he's moved by the small objects and the Grand Canyon. And I see all of that. But so do atheists see all of that. And what does it do for them? Nothing. So here's my question. If we had proof positive to this world that God was the creator, proof positive, would it change anything? Now let me give you an example. Some in our denomination for a long, long, long time, and there's some statements from the spirit of prophecy, if you dig down and you tend to want to interpret them that way, that some think within our denomination that someday Noah's Ark will be found. Now, here's my question. If Noah's Ark is found, what do you think that would change? Now, that one I do want an answer on.
I don't think it would change anything for me.
Okay, fair statement. What do you think that would change in the world's eye view? Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't believe it was Noah's.
Okay, that's one option.
It really wouldn't change a whole lot because even archaeologists find a lot of things that validate certain things in the Bible, history and things in the Bible. They're still atheists.
Okay. All right. Now, remember, we have spent a lot of our time in the last 2 or 3 years, if you read the denominational papers and you follow Loma Linda and you follow some of these things that's been happening, is within our church, which we could have never imagined 30 years ago, there's a great debate on creation and evolution, and it was a world created in 7 literal days. Which I believe it is, and all of these things because we have this fact and this fact and this fact. See? Now, let me give you some what I think proof positives are, and then we'll hopefully by 11:14, because I will let you out on time, come to a conclusion, and at least they won't go back to Topeka and say, that was the craziest class I ever seen. All right. Now, let's look at some proof positives and see what it did. Israel is in Egypt. And God sends a message to Pharaoh to let my people go. Who remembers what the first plague was? Yes?
Well, on Eve, that she would have labor pains.
No, no. Children of Israel in Egypt. What was the first plague? Excuse me, not pain. Plague. Pardon? Nile. Yeah. Nile changed to blood. Why was that significant? They worshipped the Nile. There was a God to them. So, their god, their water, turns to blood. They had one on frogs. They worshipped frogs. Can you imagine bowing down at night and saying, "Dear frog"? But they worshipped them. Locusts worshipped. Every one of those nine plagues were gods of Egypt. That God said, if you think the Nile can support you, I'll show you what I can do with it. If you think frogs will influence your life, I'll show you what I'll do with that. And the locusts, and on through. Finally, did Pharaoh get the message? He did for a while, because what did he call Moses in and say? I'm going to let you go. Then he got mad again. Changed his mind. Now let's go to the 10th one. Everything. What was the most precious thing in the family of an Egyptian? That firstborn. And God took that one. Now don't you think that would send a message if you sat down and you said, let's see, we worshipped a river, we worshipped a frog, we worshipped locusts, we worshipped this, we worshipped that, and worshipped that, my most prized possession, they're all gone. Man, this must be what? A god. And so he let them go, and then what happened immediately? Got mad again.
Yeah. This is from God.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, out of love for the Egyptians, that's what God was trying to do, to tell to them, can't you see who I am? And it did no good. Well, you say these were heathens. Heathens, is that the right word? Heathen? Heathen?
Yeah.
One of those two. They wasn't Seventh-day Adventists. Now, let's go to Seventh-day Adventists of the days. We think the Egyptians were kind of hard-hearted, kind of stupid, kind of going on. Let's look at the Israelites. This is God's people. It's estimated there's about 6 million of them left Egypt. By the way, of the original families that left Egypt, how many got into the Promised Land? Two. So God does all of this, don't you think, Blaine? You know, here you're in bondage, you've been praying, you're let go by some miracle, you're going off to the Promised Land. Don't you think that would certainly have faith in God? And they get to the Red Sea, and what happens? And by the way, do you understand that God took them to the Red Sea deliberately? Not by accident. And they get to the Red Sea, and what do they do?
Complain.
Start complaining. Right off the bat. Less than 24 hours. And what does God do for them?
Create
a miracle. Now this has got to be proof positive. And then he feeds them. Cloud by day keeps the heat off of them. Fire by night keeps them warm. Do you realize in all the times of the wanderings that they never cut their feet? They never had bruises. They were protected. Their clothing was protected. They were fed 3 meals a day. And what did they do?
Complained.
And then finally, God says, well, I think you all are ready to go in the Promised Land. So they send 12 spies up there to take the land. Now here they had seen God speak to on Mount Sinai. They heard Him. And so when the spies all get there, what's their report when they come back? Man, those are big people.
Great land, but big people.
Yeah. And 10 of them, with all the proof positives they had, 10 of them said, there ain't no way. Well, you say that's the Old Testament. So, let's go to the New Testament. Jesus spent 3.5 years. Wherever He went, He took care of people. You know, I'm listening to Mill as he was talking about his son and family over there. And, you know, they're going to have an influence center. And they're going to talk to them about health, food, and music, and things like that. Do you realize that as Jesus walked around in His 3.5 years ministry, He preached very few sermons. He was always doing. I like Southern gospel music. My supportive wife doesn't. Big help she was today. So I'm listening to a song that just got my attention. And I got thinking about that. I'm going to preach a sermon on it. If I ever get away from the names of God. Is, you talk about proof positive. Song goes something paraphrasing. Guy says, I hear a commotion in a crowd down the street. So I run and I see a man running. And I asked the crowd, what's going on? And they said, see this man? He was a lame person. And see the deaf mute over, the mute over here? He's telling the deaf man about what happened. And if you don't believe all of that, ask the blind man. He saw it all. And that's what Jesus did when He came to this earth, was He healed people. He took care of their infirmities. He met with them where they were at. He took care of them, met their needs, preached very few sermons. Was that... Now, if you think that you were in a meeting and the lame man's running, the mute man is explaining to the deaf man what happened, and the blind man says, I saw it all, wouldn't that be pretty positive of what in the world's going on? And what did it accomplish with the normal Jewish nation?
Nothing.
And then let's look at the final proof positive is the raising of Lazarus. Was there any doubt that Lazarus was dead? How do we know?
4 days.
4 days. Very important. Because for 3 days in the Jewish things, all kinds of things could happen. But the fourth day, you were, in modern English, el dedo. I guess you're not going to have me teach English in Thailand, are you? Okay, let's check. They're dead. He's dead. Everybody knew he's dead. He stunk. Sadducees, the leading ruler of the general conference of their day, did they believe in resurrection? No. And so here's everybody around, family crying. Mary and Martha saying, what in the world took you so long? If you would have got here, you could have prevented it. Yes, He could. And He stands there. And He calls Lazarus, come forth. And the earth shook. And He came forth. And He walked around these people. He was able to testify to these people. I was dead. I am alive. And Jesus turns to the Jewish nation, the Sadducees mainly, and says, you all have said forever, only God can forgive sins and only God can resurrect. And here stands Lazarus. What did it do to them?
Nothing.
Made them mad.
Accused
them. And this is where they decided at all cost, this man who just raised someone from the dead, who turned to us and said, "Can't you see who I am? Only God can forgive sins. And the last 3 years and a half I've been going around saying, 'Thy sins be forgiven. Your sin, well, not you, your sins be forgiven. Your sins are forgiven.' And I just raised Lazarus from the dead." And they desired more, and it was there they said, "This man must die." And everything moved. Proof positive. Accomplished nothing. Now, let's go to the end of time in the book of Revelation. And if you don't believe I'm correct, come and listen to Roger's class the next 5 weeks. At the end of time, all the people will be gathered together. And before them will come the panoramic view of everything that's ever happened in this universe. And every person who has chose to be in rebellion against God will see where they fit into that plan. And they will see how God worked to appeal in their lives. And they will see where God intervened in their lives, just as He did with Adam and Eve, with the Egyptians, with the Israelites, with the lame, the poor, all of these people. He intervened in their life. And they will see where they reject God. Now, what does Revelation tell us that the wicked will do at this time? What?
They'll proclaim God is fair.
They will proclaim He is fair and He's just. Do you get that picture? Highest compliment that God can be given. You are fair. You are just. Proof positive. So do they stand up and say, "Now we are ready for baptism. We accept you. We would like to spend eternity with you." What do they say?
We can overtake
the city. Yeah, you got Napoleon and Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, other generals. We can take them. Doesn't change anything. Oh, how God will be looking at them at that time. I believe with tears running down His eyes. Because it's the final appeal to His children. His masterpiece. Look at Ephesians 2:10 sometime in different languages. And it talks about being in the likeness of God. But one of the interpretations says, you are God's masterpiece. I don't understand all these orgasms and osmosis, promosis, demosis. I do understand this. I'm God's masterpiece. And Sue says, "Thank goodness there's not another one of me like this in the universe." But there's not another one of you in this universe either. And He says, "You are my masterpiece." So He sits there after revealing Himself, showing the great panoramic view. Where they fit in, they see God, and they'll say, for that instance, "Yes, God, You are correct. Yes, God, You are just." But it doesn't change them. And the next thing that happens is they begin to say, we can take that city. How unbelievable that is. Who are we as a Christian nation? Kind of sliding away, but as a denomination, as an Arlington church, as a scientist, as a preacher, an evangelist, a teacher, think that through logic that our proof positives are going to change anybody. Because somebody who looks at a mountain and says there is God, somebody looks at the mountain and says, man, it took 30 trillion years for this to get here. So why do we spend our time? You know, I'm a sales trainer for security systems. I had the privilege of training over 1,000 people in this business. When they go to a door and the person says, I don't need a security system, what do you think I tell them to do? Pardon? Go next door. Because see, logic's not going to move you. How many of y'all have fire insurance on your homes? 1 out of 100 that you'll ever use it. How many of y'all have automobile insurance? 1 out of 10. Odds of being broken into? 1 out of 4. Right, Jim? Now, I don't see a stampede for yous that don't have security systems to run out and get one. Why? Because logic doesn't move a person. They either have a preceded need for it, or we do a lot of business the day after. So, in my business, logic, proof positives, doesn't change anybody. It's an emotional buy. So the person says, well, I don't need one. I've lived here for 20 years. I've never been broken into. I don't need it. Go next door. The same thing in trying to prove to people that creation versus evolution, that we're correct. Logic does nothing. In the late 1890s, we used to have Seventh-day Adventist evangelistic people go around in the debate, mainly the Church of Christ, debate on Sabbath versus Sunday. Now, I love debate. When I went to public high school, before I went to King, I was on the debate team, and I was lucky enough to win my big debate. And I love debate. Love to argue. But I've learned a long time ago, Debbie's laughing, she knows. A long time ago, you know, hey, how many people do you think, when we went before the great churches of Christ and the great communities and debated Sabbath versus Sunday, that we won to God? Probably not. The great debate, so what? They got what they think's correct. We have what I think's correct. Some things in my life I know's correct, but it doesn't translate to their correctness. So what? What is the greatest power that there is a God? That I am interested in. And it's not if God created in six literal days and rested one, which I believe He did. It's not if He created this and spun off into this. Don't care. But I know the only reason I'm here today is what He's created within me. And so when it comes to nature, I'm telling you, if I get to heaven, I will not have a garden.
Yeah.
I might be in. What? Yeah, okay. Boy, there's a long story on that one, Mel. Yeah, but I'll get Mel to do it. He's a nice guy. See, I will not have a garden. Now, I might be over in the library instructing some of the disciples on the 2,300-day prophecy. Because, you see, that's what interests me. Not the prophecy, just the fact of 2,300 days. You see? But I know the most powerful argument I can have is God creating, or is this evolution, or did God create in 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years? Did He do this slow, fast, up and down and around? I don't care. The only message I have to anybody that I have the privilege of coming in to is, this is a man who changed my life. He saw me where I was. He took pity on me. He saw what I could become. And He lifted me out of the pig pen and brought me to the person that He desired for me to be. Do I fall down? Absolutely. Do I trip? Absolutely. But He's right there and picks me up, dusts me off, and says, man, that wasn't fun, was it, Ernie? Well, let's keep going down the path. You see, those that saw Christ do what He did, those who then Israel, two of them out of our 6 million that left got the message. Now, some of them died along the way, but basically two of them got that you are God, and if I trust you, you'll carry me through. That's where we need to waste our debates and our talents and our message and our arguments and our talking and everything is, this is a God. I know what I was like. I met Him and this is what He's done in me. Why would we want to debate anything less? It's a waste of time. Father in heaven, in your ministry on this earth, you healed 10 lepers. All of them took off. Only one came back. But the other 9 were still healed. That's just the way you are. Help us not to get embroiled in any debates, any discussions, any theological concepts that takes us away from the great message. You love us. Every person we come in contact is your masterpiece. You have said that over and over. You said in Jeremiah, I knew you before you were even born. You said in Ephesians, you are my masterpiece. That is our great message, to come in contact with the Creator that created you and can recreate you. How can we further any message differ than that? Bless this class. Bless these people. Bring us together next week and give us a safe week. This is my prayer. Precious name of Jesus. Amen.